So the part of the maimer we're going to learn today, we're going to get through the whole thing. It's a very unusual maimer. It's unusual because it opens with a lot of questions that like fit into the frame of nigla, of the revealed area of Torah. These are like basic questions, the good questions, not from a mystical perspective, from a very technical perspective. And we're not really going to answer most of those questions, at least not in a technical way or in a literal way. In fact, the Maimer doesn't even answer all the questions, not in the manner of Nigla. It kind of segues into a more mystical perspective. And part of the way to understand this Maimer, I think, is that some things in Torah can really only be understood through the prism of a mystical perspective. In other words, there could be parts of Torah which speak about Nigla, the revealed area of Torah, but the revealed part of Torah and the mystical part of Torah are not intrinsically separate. They're not mutually exclusive. And sometimes the only way something will be understood in a satisfactory manner is if you have the bigger picture. It's not always like that. Sometimes you can understand it in the way of Nigla, in the revealed area of Torah. You can understand it in the mystical area of Torah. And there are times when, you know, without a mystical explanation, you really, it just doesn't work. And I think this is one of those instances, even though the Rebbe doesn't point it out here. Sometimes he points it out. Sometimes he points out that the only way you can understand something, this is one of those examples where you can see it, but anyway, that says a bit of a preface. So the Maimer focuses on the manna and the unique description of the manna, which is only found in Parshas Ekev, even though the manna has been discussed multiple times prior to Parshas Ekev and to the end of Chumash Devarim. We've been hearing about manna like ever since when? Since the middle of the book of Exodus. It opens with the words Vayancha, God starved you, or he tormented you, or gave you anguish, anguished you, Vayarivecha, and he starved you. Vayachilcha samon, and he fed you the mon. Which seems to indicate not that first he tormented and starved you, and then when you were like on the last, you know, you could barely survive, then he gave you some mon. But rather, that was the manna experience, that somehow the manna experience seems related to being tormented and starved. In other words, it was like starvation diet. Literally, this was a starvation-inducing or almost a tormentful kind of consumption. What does that mean? So that's Medayek Admur Rashab Nishmaseid. The Rebbe Rashab, in one of his Maimarim, which comes from the year 1915, he's Medayek, and he says, the Bekama Betedas Medubar B'mailas Haman. There are many places in Torah where we hear about the virtues of the manna. How remarkable the manna was, how special the manna was, how unique it was, what a miraculous kind of occurrence. V'kan, Omer, and here in Parshas Ekev, when Moshe Rabbeinu recounts the saga of the Jewish people in their leaving the land of Mitzrayim and having the desert sojourns making their way to Eretz Yisrael, here he emphasizes what seems to be the opposite of a virtue. V'yancha, v'yarivecha. Nobody signs up for pain. Say, pain for free. No, you don't have a lineup. Or who wants to starve? Nobody puts their hands up. But that's what this says. Vayancha vayarivecha. Shehu l'cha'eira heipecha maila. It would seem, certainly on the surface, that this is the polar opposite of a virtue. This is a vice. When people come and tell you about an experience, it was amazing. We starved. Really? Yeah, and we felt pain the whole time. I mean, that's like mental illness or something doesn't make any sense. Nobody looks for things like that. So why would Moshe Rabbeinu say, you know, God, he took care of you, he provided you, in fact, he starved you, and he tormented you? Doesn't make any sense. Really, now, Gam Tzarech L'Havin, another thing that has to be understood about the manna altogether, is the Issa B'Gemara, that there's a statement which is made in the Gemara in Brachas, on page 48. And it says, it's talking about the mitzvah of Birchat HaMazon. Brachas, of course, is attracted, it deals with blessings, and we start off talking about the mitzvah of reciting Shema, and then we're quickly introduced to the blessings that introduce the recitation of Shema, and that's a subject in and of itself. And then the Gemara talks to us about blessings. Blessings before we eat. And then, the Gemara finally starts talking about the real blessing, the one biblical blessing, which is, you eat your seder, now it's time to make a bracha. So it says, the Gemara says, Moshe tikin li Yisrael Birchat HaZon, that Moses himself was the one who instituted the blessing, the first blessing of Birchat HaMazon, the grace after meals. And when did he do this? B'shah sheyarad lehem haman, when the manna fell for the first time. Then the Gemara says, Yehoshua, Joshua, tikin lehem birchas ha'aretz, he was the one who instituted the blessing over the land, which is the second blessing. And when was that? Kevon shenichnas alaretz. Once they entered the land of Israel, so Joshua said, we should thank God for this land. And so he made the bracha of al haaretz. Because of Harashba, the famous commentator on the Talmud, Rabbi Shlomo ben Avraham ben Aderet, who comments copiously on most of the tractates of Talmud, especially on Maseches Brachas, he says the Pirush Moshe Tikkun, the meaning of Moshe, instituted or established. And then the Gemara comes along and says Yehoshua Tikkun, Yehoshua instituted or established this idea of grace after meals. It doesn't mean that Moses established the idea of reciting grace after meals. It doesn't mean that Moses established the principle of thanking Hashem for food, because that's a biblical mitzvah. It means, says the Rashba, shetiknu lohem matbeya habrachis, that the specific syntax of the blessing was formulated by Moses and then by Joshua. The habrachis atzmam, the idea of reciting a blessing or thanking God for the food in blessing form, that's min ha-Torah. That's biblical. Ukedisa b'gemara, like the Gemara itself says, expounding another verse in this week's Torah portion, v'achalta, you eat, v'savata, and you feel satiation, uverachta, and then you make a bracha. And the Gemara says, what's that talking about? V'achalta, you eat, v'savata, you satiated, uverachta, what's that referring to? And the Gemara says, well, that refers zo berchat hamazon. This is the blessing of grace after meals. So that's a biblical bracha. And we make the bracha al haaretz, the bracha we on the land. This is the blessing of the land of Israel. And actually, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. If you're not able to inherit the land, do you still have a mitzvah of reciting a bracha? And that's like a whole discussion about that. So ve'isa b'lekut ha'teira, it the Alter Rebbe says in lekut ha'teira, the hatam al shagam bebirchas haaretz mazkirin va'al achilas mazoin. He says, if the first blessing is about sustenance, about food, the second blessing is about the land. So then why the second blessing do we say, al ha'aretz v'al ha'mazon, for the land and for the food? If it's a different blessing, if this is the blessing of hazanes ha'koil, is hazanes ha'koil. The first blessing talks about food. The second blessing should speak about the land. So why is it that in fact it's not the case? You already thank God for the food first time around. And the answer is, he says, who? The Alter Rebbe himself says the problem with the first blessing is that it was recited for the manna. And the problem with the manna was lechem and hashamayim. That was bread from heaven. And in fact, there's a discussion in Achrenim, what bracha they used to make, because we assume that they used to do all the mitzvahs already coming out of Mitzrayim. What bracha did they make when they ate the manna? We know they made a bracha after, same blessing we make, because Moshe Rabbeinu established a bracha. What bracha did they make before? One opinion is that they made a bracha, ha-maitzi lechem min ha-shamayim. Maitzi lechem min ha-aretz, maitzi lechem min ha-shamayim. So he brought food forth from the heavens. U-mazin she-be-birchas ha-aretz. However, the second blessing, the blessing of that we invite over the land, includes the blessing not for food that comes from heaven, but rather lechem in ha'aretz. So that's what the Alter Rebbe says. And the Rebbe notes that this really requires some clarification. Tzarech bir. The birchas hazon, hi alachila hamazbaas. The first blessing, which is a fulfillment of the biblical mitzvah, the biblical mitzvah of reciting grace after meals, is specifically applicable when there's v'savoto, when there's satiation. Achila ha-masbas, v'achalta v'savoto. The achila ha-masbas, an eating, a consumption that brings satiation, is be'ikir, seems primarily to take place, b'lechem in ha'aretz. Feeling sated is when you eat normal food, not manna, miraculous food. V'afal pikein, nonetheless, ha-bracha of al ha-mazin, the lechem in ha'aretz, the blessing, reciting and saying thank you for food, which satiates, is in the second blessing. That's in the bracha of al ha'aretz. Shaloi nemer ba ve'achalta v'savata. We don't say the words v'achalta v'savata. V'achalta v'savata, you eat and you say it. When do we say that? In the first blessing. V'hanusach de berchas hazon, which is v'achalta v'savata, we're reciting over, principally, the idea of manna, which is food that did not satiate. As it says right here in the parsha, where we open the maimer, the Torah says, God said, I gave you pain. I tormented you. I starved you. So if you tormented and starved us, for heaven's sake, how does that work out to be the blessing of grace after meals that's recited prior, only when there's prior satiation? Satiation, in fact, leads me to make this bracha. In order to be able to make this bracha, I have to be sated. Something doesn't seem to add up here. Now, I'm just going to warn you, we're not going to get to an answer on a technical level, and I don't really know if this maimer is going to answer the technical level. This is a famous question and a big discussion in the Achroinim on the Gemara to talk about this, actually. Now, here's something else that has to be understood once we're talking about starvation and getting tormented. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah to be tormented. It's called inui. When is there a mitzvah in the Torah to have inui? Some people think it's a mitzvah to be miserable all the time. That's a big mistake. That's not a Jewish thing. When is there a mitzvah to torment yourself? To deprive yourself? Yom Kippur. So the inui, the Torah says ve'inisim. Inisim means really you pain yourself, you anguish yourself. So that's for Yom Kippur. How do we know what it is? Maybe it means self-flagellation. Maybe on Yom Kippur, everybody is supposed to bang their head against the wall 500 times until the brains are falling out. And then you have inui. It says ve'inisim. Torment yourself. Maybe it means beat yourself. I don't know. Maybe it means freeze yourself. Maybe it means being in a very great heat. What does it mean, torment? There are many forms of torture. What is this self-inflicted torture? What is it referring to? So we say that it refers to denying oneself of eating. Not eating. We learn this from Inu Anemar Gabay Man. How do we learn that? Because it says the word Vayancha, it says torment, it says anguish with regard to the manna. Nemakan. Here by Yom Kippur it says Inui. You should anguish your souls. And there it says in Parshas Ekev, Inui, Vayancha, he tormented you. And just like here, the torment, the anguish, is an anguish of starvation, of hunger. Afkan, Inui Ravan. We talk here about a ravenous form of torment, the pain of hunger. Vetzarech Bior, this really needs to be understood. She Inui Ravan, the mon, that the anguish, if you will, or pain of hunger that was attached to the manna, lahizbia isam kechol hadarish, it would seem, did not provide full satiation. In fact, full satiation. And one of the reasons it's given, on a very literal level, the Gemara in Yuma says, enidema mishi eshli pas basali limisha enli pas basali. You cannot liken or compare in any way, shape, or form satiation that people feel when they have a pantry that's full. When you have a full pantry, you're calm. When the pantry is empty, and you don't know where tomorrow's meal is going to come from, no matter how much you eat today, it's never enough. What am I eating afterwards? It's a psychological thing. When people travel, they like to take along some extra food. Not because they can eat it, but somehow when the food is there, psychologically, they feel okay. The day there's no food left, I'm hungry. It's just the way people's minds are. Even in English, it's like a saying about an empty cupboard. But the Gemara talks about this. And when it came to the manna, one of the things they did not have in their makeshift dwellings was a pantry. There was no storage of food. Because the manna had dvar yom b'yomi, there was emphasis that the manna would fall in the morning and it was all gone by the night. There was no manna for tomorrow. There was no planning. What will be if? There was no what will be if. We're in God's hands in the most literal way. Then the Gemara says something else. Besides the empty cupboard syndrome, you cannot compare somebody who actually sees the food they're eating to somebody who doesn't see the food. Presentation is a big part of satiation. It's a $1 billion industry. Making food look good. It doesn't feel good when you're an astronaut and eating out of a tube like toothpaste. It's not really a satisfying meal. A satisfying meal smells good, looks good. It's a full-bodied experience. And people go into great pains to make the food look right. One could argue that makes absolutely no sense. Because the moment it gets on your plate, it ends up inside and doesn't look anything like the way it looked on your plate. It's a whole artistic form, a beautiful plate, and then it's all gone. And we're going to think what it turns into. So what's the difference what it looks like? The main thing is you just got to stay alive. Well, it doesn't work like that. People enjoy presentation. They enjoy not only eating the food, it's not only something that their taste buds enjoy. People eat with their eyes. In fact, people eat with their eyes and take too much food because they eat with their eyes. And the manna didn't look like anything. There was no presentation. What was on your plate? A pile of crystals. It didn't look appetizing. Now, even though the manna had the most extraordinary wealth, if you will, on a level of on the culinary level, on the edible level, that we know that the man hayatayim kol laminim, you could taste like whatever you wanted, but it didn't look like that. It could taste like roast beef, but it didn't look like roast beef. It could taste like lasagna, but it didn't look like lasagna. And because it didn't look like it, it didn't have that same satiation at all. So we would say the manna was a starvation diet. Well, it didn't provide full satiation. That's what we could say. But yet, in the Gemara, we're actually comparing the inui ravin, the hunger of the manna, to the hunger of Yom Kippur, which indicates that it's more than just a lack of full satiation. It indicates that the manna actually induced hunger. It actually, you came hungry and you left hungrier. You stayed alive, but there was never a feeling of satiation. Can you imagine? People went for 40 years, never felt satisfied. No wonder they were so crazy. Like, it's almost an inhumane way to live. Mashma, it seems, she'inoy ra'ovain, the man, that the hunger of man, it's not that the eating of the man didn't satiate al derech haragil as normal food satiates. Ela k'meishal le'ochal, it was actually as if you didn't eat. It was actually as if you didn't eat. Like, it was like you hungered. So we have to understand even more. Such a seems like such a contradiction. In order to make this bracha, you have to have satiation. And the bracha was made for sustenance, which never satiated. Not only it didn't satiate, it induced the opposite kind of feeling. Induced hunger. And we often have to understand that now the manna hasn't fallen in a very, very long time. And yet, all the blessings, ostensibly, we're not thanking God for manna. We don't eat manna. And nonetheless, the birchas of Hazon is the nusach shatikin meshalamon. We're all reciting the verbiage that was authored by Moses for manna when we're eating regular bread. Okay, so this is where the technical part of the Maamar ends. Okay, we're not going to answer this question in a technical way. We're going to be talking about this all through spiritual terminology. And the segue into the spiritual approach is not in a mystical text, but rather in an allegoric text, in the Medrash. And the Medrash will be understood through the prism of Kabbalah and Chassidus. The Yuvin Zebahagdim will understand this with a preface. The Isa B'Medrash. There is a Medrash which is found in Kehelas. And it says, the Medrash notes that Haman ha'yamaychol rovin, that the manna was food of starvation. The Pirush vayari vecha, that God starved you, means that the man is the vayari vecha koi ala man, said the Medrash. The manna starved you. Eating man starved you. Shaman hereveischa, it made you hungry. This is like crazy stuff. The more you ate man, the hungrier you got. What does that mean? Like, how does that work? The thing is like this. The man reim is la'agada. And here's where there's a switch over. It's very, very, we're just subtly switching into a different reality. This is like the Gemara describing the size of the stratosphere, outer space. Mahaloch tof kuf yomim, that's a distance, tof kuf shana, it takes 500 travel years. We use light years because it's light travels at a different speed. But the Gemara says like from here to outer space is 500 years of travel. Meaning a person had to walk there, it would take 500 years. Whatever that means. And the problem, of course, with knowing whether that's literal or not, is the very next sentence in the Gemara is talking about Ragle HaChayas Keneged Kulan. Talking about the feet of Malachim. Okay, Malachim don't have feet. They don't have bodies. So is the Gemara literal or is the Gemara allegorical? Is it metaphoric? Nobody knows the answer to that question. All we know is that there's limitation and there is some kind of size, some kind of distance. What exactly the Gemara means, we don't know. So, like, the Medrash starts off talking about food that makes you hungry, but then all of a sudden, we're talking about Agada. Agada is a kind of Torah. It's allegorical Torah. And Kemeshir Kosov, how do you know that this refers to the sustenance, the nurturing element of Torah, that Torah is like food? Like it says elsewhere, V'Torah is like food. People understand ideas like they digest them, it becomes part of you, just like food becomes a part of you. So we know that the manna specifically refers to the agada part of Torah, Kemeshikasev, Hukazer Agad. It describes the appearance of the man as coriander seeds. Zera gad lavan. The isav mechilta. The mechilta says on that statement, which is found in the book of Exodus, what does it mean? Zera gad lavan is coriander. The Gemara says, agad. God is a permutation of the word agoda, agadic or allegoric. Shemeshechas libe shaladim. That the nature of allegory is that it draws you in. There's a part of Torah which is very technical. It's almost dry. It's not so enticing. It doesn't draw you in. But Agada draws people in. Like if you want to tell people, we're going to learn Kabbalah secrets, everybody comes running. You tell them, today we're going to learn the technical law of when you should say Asher Yotzar when you go to the washroom. It's not necessarily going to bring out the biggest crowd. It's not so exciting. We're like technicalities. We learn technicality stuff. There are some technically minded people. But the technicalities of Torah are not so enticing. They don't draw you in. But Torah allegory is very interesting. It's like, that's cool stuff. Oh, wow. It's like so mystical. So stories and allegories and metaphors. And the nature is that it piques people's interest. And ultimately, this refers to Pnimiyas HaTorah, to the esoteric inner track of Torah. It's like it's explained in many places. Lechem min ha'aretz, bread from the earth. That's Galya the Torah. That refers to the revealed area of Torah, which talks about earthly phenomenon, which uses terminology and verbiage of the everyday world, the tangible, what we call concrete reality. And then lechem min hashamayim, but bread from heaven. That refers to Pnimiyas HaTorah. That refers to the inner track, inner essence of Torah. V'kivin shePnimiyas HaTorah hu rak yedias hametzias. Since when we learn about the inner essence of Torah, we're only knowing about it. V'lo hasagas hamos, we don't really know what we're talking about. Like if I talk about an ox that gored a cow, I more or less know what I'm talking about. I've seen oxen and I've seen cows. I never saw one gored, but you know, it's not so hard to imagine. If I'm talking about a halacha and a Shabbos of whether I can or cannot remove the carrots from my chicken soup on Shabbos because it's a melacha of boirer, because I'm going to be selecting or separating, I know what that is. I know what chicken soup is. I know what carrots are. I see him every week. But when I talk about Atzilus and Bria and Yetzia, and I talk about Malachim, and I talk about the Zoh and Malchus, I have no idea what I'm talking about. It's not like, so draw me a picture of Malchus. What does Ze'ir Ampin look like? What color is Radlo? Well, it doesn't work like that. I can talk to you about it. I can actually make sense of it. I have, you know, there's a hierarchy, and I'm not an ignoramus, but to know what it is, I don't know what it is. How can I know what it is? If anybody thinks they do know what it is, then they don't know what it is. So Biel Kahn tells a story that there was once a Hungarian chassid who was coming close to the chassidus Chabad, and he was learning, and he came to the Biel after many of these sessions, and he says, okay, the Biel, I'm really starting to get these ideas. I just want to remember, which floor is Atzilus? On the... People said, hey, this thing that still is on a floor, but like it's a level. A level means you have to climb to get there. But they say, this is a very deep idea. We better go into the attic or go into the basement to learn this. But this is very lofty. Okay, let's go into the third floor because it's a lofty idea. Or better, we should learn this in a plane because, you know, or at least while we're skydiving. That's ridiculous. There's nothing to do. Lofty or deep is all metaphoric. It doesn't mean physical space. So when we talk about these mystical ideas, we cannot really understand the mahus of what we're talking about. And because of that, so you never really get satisfied. You never really could sink your teeth into it. You never say, oh, I know exactly what I'm talking about. The more you learn, the more intriguing and interesting it is, but also the more frustrating it is. And some people get very frustrated from this. Like, okay, this is too mystical for me. I don't know what I'm talking about. Give me chicken soup. You know, like, talk to me. Now I know what you mean. So the people come along and say, well, Shabbos. What Shabbos is your nicest shirt. You wear a silk shirt and the tasty soup and hot challah. So yeah, Shabbos. I know what that is. That's Shabbos. What are you, an idiot? Shabbos Elias Elumis. Shabbos is the world's on a higher Madega, and Shabbos is the Gili of Malchus, and Shabbos is when Zoh is elevated. I don't know what you're talking about. I know about silk shirts. I know about hot soup. I don't know about Zoh and Malchus. I don't know what you're talking about. So on one hand, it's very, very intriguing. It's very exciting. It opens our minds. On the other hand, it starves us. Like, I'm not getting anywhere. I don't know what this is. And that's why the manna is had the starvation sensation. Because the manna represents to us a level of Torah which we're not really able to, so to speak, wrap our heads around. We can't know it as we know the concrete reality we live in. So there's a part of Torah that deals with concrete reality, and a person learns that and he feels, okay, I got it. I understand the halacha. I got this 100%. I figured it out. I got it. I'm clear on this. I know what happens. You cut an onion with a milchik knife, and then you take that onion and you put it in a fleshik pot. I know it's milk and meat. I get that. I know tzugizun. I know what that means. I get it. But then I start talking to him, mystical stuff. I don't know what's going on over here. And there's almost a sense of frustration. Like Shlomo HaMelech says, Yosef Deir Yosef Machlif. The more you know, the more pain you have. Or the more you realize you don't know. And that's the starvation sensation. The more you eat this food, the hungrier you get, the more you realize that you actually don't have knowledge, which is all-pervading. The more you realize you don't actually have that sense of satiation, and that, my dear friends, is what the man is talking about. And that's the Vayanch of Vayari Vecho. And the Rebbe starts already now, still going into this in a deeper way, starts splitting hairs already, and he says that there's two levels within mystical Torah teaching. But Mikyasir, he says, there's a level of mystical teaching that inspires us. And it fires up our hearts. And it gets us excited. That is a part of the Torah you could still get appreciation from. You get satiation from. I look, see this? I feel elevated. Elevates me. Excites me. It engages my heart. That's what we call emotional intelligence, which people think is a Buddhist idea, Chas V'Shalom, but it's really not. It comes from the Torah. Emotional intelligence, this is the idea of the Torah, the way, what I learn that inspires my heart. Then there's the part of learning mystical parts of Torah, which do not necessarily inspire our heart. That speaks only to the brain. When it speaks only to the brain, it's only something which I can understand on some level, but it doesn't actually give me an emotional satisfaction. Doesn't inspire me emotionally. That really is gives me a sense of hunger, because whatever I understand, whatever I know, I realize I don't know what I'm talking about. And there's levels. You know, and then you know you don't know. And knowing you don't know is the reward, so to speak, of learning that mystical level. And since it doesn't provide full satiation, that's why the metaphor of the man is employed. And that is the meaning of Vayancha, he tormented you. Vayarivecha, he starved you. He gave you a Torah, which the more you learn, the hungrier you get. And of course, when Mashiach will come, it says there will be hunger. But loy rav lo lechem, v'leitzom lo mayim. The Navi says we're not going to be hungry for bread and water. When Mashiach will come, we'll have hunger. The hunger will be for Dvar Hashem, for the word of Hashem, may be fulfilled, Meretz Hashem, speedily and in our days. Good Shabbos. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. And we should be zeiche that from our microcosmic Shabbos, our Shabbos, which is idea of serenity and peace, we should be able to enter into Yom Shekule Shabbos, a day which is all serenity and peace, L'chai Ha'ilam, for eternity. The Bias Mashiach Tzidkeinu B'mheira U'B'Yameinu. Amen.